Greetings, 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, this week, big news. Is there a second wave emerging now? Maybe it's just the expansion of the first wave into the South and Southwest, because it's very clear now we have a significant resurging of the virus in no fewer than 21 states, concentrated largely in the South and Southwest, Texas, Florida, Arkansas, Mississippi, Arizona, and even California. Southern California, I guess, would be Southwest. Anyway, we have 114,000 plus deaths in the U.S. from the virus and over 2 million cases. That's about 30% of the world. You know, 425,000 deaths, 7.5 million cases worldwide. Yeah, the U.S. is about a third, somewhere between a fourth and 30%, maybe. Amazing, isn't it? One of the most advanced economies and countries with supposedly one of the best medical systems is performing among the worst. It's like Brazil and India. Yeah, we have a medical system that's delivering on a par with third world. Well, the reason for that, of course, we know is the I don't know how you describe it, what adjective you would describe the efficiency and effectiveness of the government, particularly the federal government and the Trump administration. I mean, Trump is running the government, at least the executive branch, the way he ran his companies into the ground. He was totally incompetent. What he does is move his money around and refuse to pay and close down and reopen under another names and the whole thing, and banks won't even loan them any money anymore except for organizations like Deutsche Bank, big laundering, global laundering organization, money laundering organization. Okay, if you look at in those 21 states, hospitalizations up, death rates up, the test positivity rate, in other words, testing people who turn out to have it, up. 20,000 cases a day. Emerging problems with ICU beds in Arizona and otherwhere. Well, it sounds like New York in March, April, doesn't it? Yeah. 21 states. Well, you know, the shutdown, the sheltering in place, had a positive effect. It did flatten the curve, particularly in states and places like New York City, California, Washington, and so forth. It did work, but now that's gone. Reopen the economy. And the red states have led the way. The southern states have led the way, and now they are experiencing the brunt of the problem. And it will get worse because it's all reopening the economy. And by the way, it will not shut down again if Trump has his way. Of course, that's a question. He says he's going to do all these draconian things if the states don't obey him, which is what he can't do according to the Constitution, but that don't mean anything to his guy. Or maybe that's just typical Trump bluster. Well, you know, Larry Kudlow, his economic advisor, came out, was it yesterday or this morning maybe, and said, we're not going to shut down the economy again, ever again. And Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, said the same thing. So, you know, they're all on the same page, the Trump administration. They can't afford to shut it down again because already it's had a significant impact on Trump and his reelection. His incompetence has been glaring and undeniable as he managed those dog and pony shows of daily reports. I mean, he just kept digging himself a bigger hole, deeper and deeper, so they took him off the air. And he is totally committed to keeping the economy totally open, or as much as he can manage to keep it open, for his election purposes. Well, what that means is that we got a trade-off between deaths and profits. Business revenues and grandma and grandpa. And guess which way we're going? All pandemics have second waves. And historically, over the last century, those second waves have been worse than the first. And we are opening up and starting a second wave. Will it be worse than the first? We'll see. We'll see how much that prediction comes true. The curve will steepen again. It flattened because of sheltering in place. And all this talk about tracking and tracing and following up and so forth isn't going to happen. You know, that's like sheltering in place. That's another way to prevent these little outbursts from becoming conflagrations and spreading geographically and population-wise, and being able to put the fires out before they do with tracking and tracing and testing. But there's no money for it, you see. I mean, the money is in the HEROES bill, $100 billion, but that won't pass. No. So, no tracking, tracing to speak of. No money there. You know, the government could be a war government and say, look, we got a lot of unemployed people out there. Let's the government hire them. Let's train them quick and put them out there and do tracking and tracing. You know, we could hire them. It could be like a Medical Works Progress Administration. You know, a Health Works Progress Administration. We could hire hundreds of thousands of people to do this, and I think, you know, it's going to be 800,000 people to really do that effectively. Well, they're out there. They're unemployed. Government could hire them. And government could do it. But it won't, because Trump isn't a war president. War president means you got to intervene and take over private markets. And, of course, he's an extreme market solution guy. Doesn't want the government involved at all, except to force meatpacking workers back to work. That's all he's good for as a war president. Okay, so, you know, the curve will steepen again, certain geographies, certain age groups. You know, if you look at the data, those over 55, grossly, inordinately affected in terms of the death rate, over 55, and it rises almost exponentially here, over 65, over 75, over 85. I've seen something, I don't know how true it is, that something like a third or 40% of the deaths have been people in nursing homes. And what's the solution for that? I haven't heard anything. Okay, we want to talk about the effect of the virus on the economy, and specifically this second emerging wave effect on the U.S. economy. If we have a second wave, and we will, and surprisingly earlier than folks previously thought, they thought it would come in the fall, early winter, but no, it's coming before. What will be the effect on the economy, whether or not we return to a sheltering in place? You may have some select states do that, but the U.S. economy won't do that. No, no, no. They've lost enough money from it. This is a capitalist system. Money comes first. And a lot of companies lost a lot of money, and many of them are on the edge of default and bankruptcy. Another shutdown will accelerate their bankruptcies and their collapse. So they're not going to do it. No, we're just going to have to deal with a second wave that will be worse than the first. The only question is the timing. Okay, so how does this COVID-19 impact the economy? We know, obviously it does. We shut down the economy there in March and April, first part of May, right? Shut it down. We saw a massive unemployment rise as a result. And predictions for the economy to contract this second quarter, somewhere between 20-40%. No one knows exactly, but no less than 20%. And we already contracted in just the first couple of weeks, in the first quarter, of 5%. I'm talking about GDP, inaccurate, but the only real general aggregate economic indicator of the economy performance we have. GDP, nonetheless, underestimates, but nonetheless, 5%, which is what it was in 2008, you see, per quarter, about 5% contraction. So just at the beginning of this economic impact, 5%. Now, four times that, at least, in the second quarter. The economy in the first half will have contracted about 25%, at least, in the U.S. 25% of a $20 trillion annual GDP is $5 trillion. Okay, when you contract that deep and that fast, it's almost impossible to keep contracting at that rate. So, you know, as people go back to work, you have a little bit of boost in the employment levels and in GDP, the economy. The growth. You'll have a little positive recovery. But having dropped 25-30%, you know, if you have a 5% recovery in the third quarter, hardly a recovery. I mean, you still got 25% to go. You still got over $3 trillion in a hole to go just to break even again with 2019, which wasn't that great a year anyway. Ah, but they will say the recession is over. Oh, we're starting to grow, even if it's minuscule, even if it's a minor growth recovery, as people start going back to work. And not everyone's going back to work. Don't make any mistake of that. And those going back to work, most of them are going back as part-time and temporary recalls. Part-time jobs, temporary jobs, which means they won't have the income they had before, which means consumption will be less. And that's a drag on the economy. Businesses aren't recalling everybody all at once. No, no, they're doing it very carefully, very slowly. They're testing the waters. And in some cases, in service industries, you know, they can't fully open. I saw some figure about those who, the return to the theme parks, you know, and it's summer, so it's the boom period, and it's after sitting at home for 2 months. The return to the theme parks is about one-fifth of their normal attendance, one-fifth, you know, Disneyland and Six Flags and water parks and all that stuff, one-fifth of normal. Well, that's why business is calling people back very slowly and only partially, because they're not sure what the demand will be, because lots of people got this thing figured out that it's not over and it's not safe. So they're not jumping out and going sitting in movie theaters. No way. They're not going to crowded restaurants. They're not even going to restaurants. entertainment of all sorts, crowds. No, they're not doing that. They're not jumping on airlines and going everywhere. They're not staying in hotels. The economy has been seriously wounded. And even if the virus went away tomorrow, you would still have these economic forces at play, set in motion now, that were in motion before the virus. Now they were exacerbated by the virus and are going to have an even more difficult time to recover, even if the virus isn't here, you see. You got to distinguish between a virus-precipitated economic contraction and independent economic factors, variables, now working its way through the economy. There are two. There are two paths to contraction here. They are, of course, feeding back on each other, but they are also independent of each other. It's important to understand that. The virus precipitated a deeper, faster contraction, but the slowdown was already there. I've talked about that before. I'm not going to go over it again. But it set in motion certain dynamics independent of the virus that are continuing and will continue. But the virus itself is continuing and will continue. And now that's getting worse too. It's important to understand the relationships here between these two set of forces. So how has COVID-19 impacted the economy since February? And what are the independent factors at play now, apart from, in addition to, although he's still interacting with, COVID-19 factors? Well, obviously, one of the first big impacts is sheltering in place, right? That was instituted in March. Sheltering in place brought much of the U.S. economy to a halt. Services, in particular. Services constitute 70% of the U.S. economy. Well, maybe 80%. Well, at least 70 to 80%. 80% of the U.S. economy. Services. Consumption is about 70% of the U.S. economy. You know, the rest is manufacturing and construction. That constitutes, you know, the categories of GDP. Construction, which is about 8% of GDP, manufacturing, which is about 10-12%, and the rest is services. 20% of services are government services, and the rest are personal services and business services. And that's what's been hit here, right? That's been whacked big time, particularly, you know, travel, hotels, entertainment of various kinds, local transport, restaurants, education, a service, retail, which is 25% of all the services, retail services. All those have been impacted significantly, and they're not coming back rapidly. They're not coming back for two reasons. One, businesses are very cautious in bringing people back. And consumers, household demand, is unknown how much that will come back. Okay, so sheltering in place, what does that do? That reduces income. People are laid off because they're told to shelter in place. They can't work. Some get paid, very few. And, you know, a lot of others get laid off, even though they weren't told to shelter in place, because business collapses. Lack of wage incomes, main determinant, wage incomes of consumption, collapse. And therefore, 70% of the economy goes into freeze mode. Now, what about business? Well, the other driver of the economy is business investment. Well, businesses aren't going to expand their operations when people aren't even buying the stuff they're offering now. So business investment is not going to increase, especially expanding output, expanding production. You know, new investment, new factories, new growth areas. Even maintaining investment, you know, working investment, working capital, maintain levels of production, working capital investment as opposed to expanding capital investment, right? Well, when they're shut down, when they don't have workers or there's no demand for their goods, then that goes into freeze mode as well. And if people don't buy, if they lay people off and therefore people won't have money to buy, therefore they don't produce, it becomes a feedback effect between consumption and investment. You see, each one causes a further deterioration of the other when they decline. Now we got a partial reopening, so some people will get more wage income now. And the partial reopening, but it's not going to reopen totally, as I said. Now, people being called back to work are heavily part-timers. Reopening means an increase in part-time. In other words, hours of work will not be full 40% or 40 hours. It'll be much less. And you can see that in the statistics. You know, last month or last week, they announced May job numbers. Remember that? Surprised everyone with 2.5 million net job gains. Well, that's people coming back. You know, that's the low-hanging fruit of reemployment. You know, restaurants and other places that were totally shut down, desperate to get some revenue. Now, you know, to some extent, the layoffs and the freeze in investment, particularly the layoffs, were offset by the CARES Act in March and the providing of those $1,200 checks and extra unemployment insurance. But that was always intended just to be a short-term palliative, a fix for a couple months maybe at most. And it's going away. Or it's been used up or it's going away. Right? So the effect of that stimulus, the consumption stimulus, has already dissipated. Fiscal policy has been only tentative here. And they need desperately another stimulus bill. Well, that's the HEROES bill that the Republicans are blocking in Congress. Okay, so fiscal policy. If you look at the CARES Act, this is important. Listen up. Fiscal policy, CARES Act, $2.7 trillion, right? First of all, $650 billion of that is in tax cuts that aren't going to be used. They're going to be taken by the end of the year because most of it's business tax cuts. Again, only 3% of the $650 billion will go to people earning less than $100,000 annual income. So it's all business-oriented tax cuts. And business does not have to spend it right now to get the tax cut. They can wait till December 31st. And even then, they just issue a buying order. They don't actually do, the spending. So, you know, it's $650 billion that's sort of in the pocket of business now. But they're not going to use it to expand. They don't have to. They can claim it later. You know, and that leaves, what, the $500 billion for the $1,200 checks and extended unemployment, $600 supplemental unemployment. So that's a stimulus or offsets the decline, you might say. What else was in the CARES Act? Well, $1.7 trillion in loans and grants to businesses, $1.7 trillion in three programs, $500 billion for big corporations, $600 billion for medium-sized corporations and financial institutions, and $350 billion for small business that they quickly had to add another $320 billion for because it was being gamed by the banks and their customers. They were stealing it, even though they weren't small business. So they had to add $320 billion. So that's $670 billion in small business, sometimes called the PPP program. $670 billion plus the $500 billion. So that's $1.1 trillion in fiscal stimulus. $1.1 trillion actually being spent because businesses have not taken up the $600 billion for medium-sized at all. None of those loans have gone out. Nothing yet. And of the $500 billion for large corporations, only $50 billion has been claimed. So that's stimulus on paper. The question is, of course, why the hell haven't medium-sized businesses and big businesses claimed those loans, let alone lend it out to stimulate the economy? You don't hear much discussion of that. Well, you know, if the true $2.7 trillion and $650 billion for tax cuts were actually spent and used to stimulate the economy, we would have a stimulus bill of 11% of GDP. 11%. But because only $1.1 trillion is actually being used, the stimulus is only 5% of GDP. 5%. That's what it was way back in 2008-09. It was 5% of GDP, and it didn't work. It didn't stimulate the real economy. It wasn't enough. And that's why we got that very slow, sluggish recovery under Obama. They just didn't spend enough. They bailed out the banks, but the banks sat on the money, you see. They didn't lend. Lending declined for years after 2008. They didn't lend it out. They hoarded it. They sat on it, or they gave it to their best customers who invested overseas, or they invested it in stock markets, financial markets. That's why we had such a terrible, slow recovery under Obama. Well, we're doing the same thing. Only 5%, and this contraction is four times worse than 2008-09, and it's only a 5% GDP stimulus, fiscal stimulus, because the banks aren't taking, private corporations, big and medium-sized, aren't taking up those loans and using them. Well, the question is, why aren't they? And as I pointed out last week, because they are bloated with cash already, and they don't want to take more loans out in which they got to use it to hire back their employees. They don't want to do that when they can get the money from the private markets and not have that obligation or the government overseeing them. So they're not taking the $1.1 trillion in loans available to them, and they're using their cash hoard. How did they get a cash hoard? Well, as I said before, it's worth repeating. They got the cash hoard from the Trump tax cuts, which fattened their coffers by hundreds of billions of dollars, and they were sitting on it through 2018-19. They boosted that cash hoard by issuing corporate bonds, which, because the interest rates so darn low, are so cheap for them. Over $1 trillion since February in corporate bond fundraising. So they added that to their profits hoard, their corporate bond issuance hoard. Then they stopped providing dividends and stock buybacks. That's hundreds of billions more. And they drew down their credit lines from the banks, hundreds of billions more. They're sitting on $2 trillion of cash. Why the hell do they need to borrow from the government with strings attached if they're sitting on $2 trillion of cash? That's why the CARES Act hasn't worked. Well, it worked, but only temporarily for a couple months for the households of this country, particularly those making less than $150,000 a year, because those are the ones who got the checks. And most of the layoffs have been service workers. Those are the people making less than $100,000 a year. Yeah, it mitigated some of their income loss, but only temporarily and only some. And now it's ending. And small businesses, yeah, they threw some money out at small businesses, but many of the small businesses who needed didn't get it. Bigger businesses stole it. And it's still only a drop in the bucket. The number of small businesses out there who desperately needed and still need assistance and aren't getting it and therefore are failing and will never hire people back. It's been a colossal failure. Fiscal policy, a colossal failure. And what about monetary policy, the Federal Reserve, of stimulating the economy? Well, as I said, you know, those $600 billion and $500 billion loans go through the Fed and through the Fed into the private banks. And from the private banks, it's supposed to go out to the rest of the country, right? But they're not working. And the low interest rates aren't stimulating anything. I mean, think about it. You know, there's this big myth about low interest rates will stimulate investment. Let's just get the interest rates low. Well, that's nonsense in a situation like this, because the cost of money does not determine investment in a situation like this. You could give free money. It wouldn't be borrowed, except by, obviously, those businesses that are failing desperately. They'll take on more debt just to buy some more time. But most of the businesses, big businesses, medium-sized big businesses, don't invest just based upon the cost of money or the cost of anything. Lower their taxes. So what? They'll take it, but it doesn't mean they're going to invest. Why? Because the investment decision is based upon expectations of profitability, rate of return, not based upon the cost of money. It's whether they think they can make a profit. To make a profit, you got to get revenues. To get revenues, you got to sell your stuff. And when people's income is collapsing and they're unemployed, they got no income to buy the stuff. Therefore, follow the thread back. No investment. So monetary policy is a failure. Here's a twist. You know, part of monetary policy, as I said, the $1.1 trillion going through the Fed, going through the private banks, out into the non-financial economy. Nothing's happening there. But did you know that the Fed has also provided another $3 trillion in free money to businesses? Another $3 trillion? $750 billion is supposed to be used for the Fed to buy corporate bonds. $750 billion. The Fed is set aside to buy corporate bonds. In other words, it's supposed to be a stimulus. Issue your bonds, corporations. Investors, professional investors, will buy those bonds. And then the Federal Reserve will buy those bonds now held by investors from the investors. In other words, corporations issue the bonds, private investors, hedge funds, equity firms, so forth, buy the bonds from the corporations, give money to the corporations, they then hoard it. The investors hold those bonds, and then they sell them to the Fed, $750 billion of them. The Fed's doing that now. But you know what? Talk about gaming the system. Listen to this. The Fed hasn't bought a dollar of that $750 billion of bonds yet. Not a dollar. Why the hell not? Why didn't it not buy in March and April? Because it's waiting for those prices to rise, and then it will pay even more to the investors for those bonds they're holding. The investors are making a killing worth $750 billion. They bought the bonds from the corporations. They're sitting on them. And as the price goes up for those bonds, they then will sell the bonds at a higher price than they bought them from the corporations to the Fed. The Fed is subsidizing big investors to the tunes of hundreds of billions of dollars. That's why they're waiting to buy the bonds. They'll probably start buying them next month. So 3 months of price increase on the bonds for these private investors. Talk about a scam. Talk about subsidizing corporations. You see, the Fed never did this before. The Fed had no mandate, no authority to buy bonds that were private corporate bonds. The Fed could only historically buy, and according to its written mandate, buy its own bonds back, its own treasuries, notes, bills, and bonds. That's all it could do. But now, it's totally subsidizing the whole capitalist system, because now they are saying, oh, we're going to buy corporate bonds, private bonds, not just government bonds, and commercial paper, and all these other private instruments, financial instruments. We're going to buy those too. And we're even going to buy bond ETFs, exchange-traded funds. And we're even going to buy junk bonds. In other words, companies that should have gone under, they hadn't because they got all this free money they loaded up on debt. Well, the government's going to take that debt off of their balance sheets, put it on its own balance sheet, and save those companies that were shaky and should have gone under long ago, but didn't because of the Fed policy after 2008. Gave them 10 years of life. They kept borrowing to stay alive. Well, now the Fed's going to buy that junk. It's the garbage can for the whole capitalist financial system now. The Federal Reserve. It's a garbage can of debt. Well, in just a couple months, its balance sheet, which is the total amount of all this debt that it buys, has jumped from $3.9 trillion to $7.2 trillion in just a couple months. It's almost doubled its balance sheet, and it's going to buy even more. You wait till it starts buying the $750 billion, paying, overpaying for it, providing a nice capital gain subsidy to these professional investors. That's monetary policy going on. We thought the corporations were scamming the system by stealing small business loans. Well, that pales in comparison to this scam through the Federal Reserve going on. Monetary policy, fiscal policy, monetary policy are no longer about stimulating recovery. They're about subsidizing the big capitalists, subsidizing them, paying their way, giving them money. All over. It's happening all over. What about the farm sector? You know, Trump is trade war with China, right? He gave the farm sector, which means big agribusiness, $28 billion of free money here in 2018-19 while the trade war was going on. You know how much more they're going to get? Well, they're going to get $16 billion immediately with another $14 billion in the pot, $30 billion. So $60 billion in the 3 years of direct subsidy to agribusiness. You know, Archer Daniel Midlands and all those guys. Not the small farmer. They didn't get much. $60 billion. That's just the farm sector. Well, they just announced today the government is going to subsidize the chip companies now, semiconductor companies. Going to give them money. You know, and they were going to give Boeing $60 billion. But Boeing said, well, if I get the $60 billion from you guys, then I got to keep all these people on the payroll. Now, And then you're going to be looking over my shoulder whether I'm doing that. I don't think I want that money from the government, that corporate loan, part of the $500 billion big corporation CARES Act. I don't think I want that. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to lay off 16,000 workers instead. And I'm going to borrow $25 billion by raising corporate bonds because it's so cheap for me to do that. So that's how Boeing responded. And all these big companies are doing the same thing. They'd rather lay people off than take a government loan to keep them on the job. Plus, I think there's another ulterior thing going on here with Boeing, and that is, let's get rid of the workers in Seattle so we can move more production to Savannah where it's non-union. Is it Savannah? I think it's, no, Charleston, South Carolina. They got their other plant down there, non-union plant. So that's what they're doing. And other companies are all doing the same, gaming the system. It's incredible. The corruption, legal corruption going on, and how this government is just writing blank checks for businesses, big businesses. I'm not talking about small business. I'm talking about big businesses, right and left, everywhere, through the congressional legislation, especially through the Fed, you see. People don't really understand how the Fed works, and therefore they can't see very clearly all the scams going on there, right? The Fed is pre-bailing out the banks, pre-bailing them out. You know, in 2008, they bailed them out after they crashed. Well, now they're throwing so much money at the banks. Why? In order to fatten up the banks' balance sheets, because they know big waves of defaults and bankruptcies in non-bank companies are coming. And they're giving the banks all kind of extra money in the hopes that they'll lend it to all these companies to prevent these defaults and bankruptcies. Big experiment, you see. We don't know whether this is going to work or not. But they're pre-bailing out the banks. What's going on is just amazing. Okay, let's go back and again, address this question of how COVID and non-COVID economic forces are impacting the economy. We know the sheltering in place whacked consumption, and we know it whacked business investment. It's also whacking, or soon to get worse, state and local governments. Yeah, big losses. Because there's no tax revenue coming in, and they have to spend a lot more because of the virus. So big losses in state and local governments going on. And the Republicans are refusing Mitch McConnell to bail out the states. You know, that's in the HEROES Act being debated. Mitch McConnell doesn't want to do it because he thinks most of the bailout money for the states will go to the blue states. And he'd rather see them stressed so that the people in those states lose confidence in what are mostly Democratic governments, Democratic governors, Democratic legislatures. So he plays the long game. He always has. You know, for a decade there, he just said no, no, no to Obama and everything. It's the long game, and it paid off for him, you know, with Trump. And he's playing a long game again, you know. Let's stick it to the blue state governors and legislatures. You know, they can go borrow from the banks and the municipal bond markets. Let them do that. Well, that's a way of just subsidizing the muni bonds and mutual funds and all these other financial institutions instead of the government bailing them out. Oh, let them go and pay interest and get their money from the capital markets. Let them go in debt, in other words, deeper than they are. And he doesn't like to bail out the blue states because those are the states that provide their public employees with better pensions, you see. And he doesn't want to support the pension systems in those states. He'd rather see the pension systems go broke and then privatize. So that's what's behind, you know, Mitch McConnell not wanting to appropriate money to bail out the states. You know, it's political blue states. It's let's increase the demand for the financial markets and the investors there. Hmm? That's what's behind his position. They're also refusing to extend the $600 unemployment insurance that was in the CARES Act, or any more emergency income checks that was in the CARES Act. They don't want to do that. What are they proposing? Well, they're proposing, instead of giving people more or continuing expanded unemployment insurance, instead of giving the unemployed the money, let's give the money to businesses by paying their wages of their employees. Yeah, let's take money out of unemployment insurance and give it to the businesses and the corporations. And then we won't check to see if they really use it to pay wages, you know, because there'll be no inspection of all this stuff. Another subsidy. Everything is throw the money at the business, at the capitalists, more and more and more and more. In every different way we can come up with, you know, whether it's tax cuts or you know, buying back their bonds or whatever it is. Let's throw more money, you know, get rid of the unemployment insurance system and give it in wage subsidy to businesses. Let's do that. Shifting everything, funneling everything, you know, into the coffers of the capitalists. What about the global economy? Well, COVID obviously is playing a role there. The global economy is crashing, worse than the U.S. even. So no demand for U.S. exports, or declining demand for U.S. exports. Let's add it up. Declining demand for U.S. exports slows the U.S. economy. Right? State and local governments in debt, in fiscal crisis, they're going to start laying people off. Right? Slows the economy. Hmm? Monetary policy is not designed or able to ensure that the free money being given to corporations is actually going to be spent on expansion and investment, and therefore more hiring. There's no way. You can provide all the money you want, but if companies don't want to expand, they're not going to borrow the money. You see, that's the difference between money supply, just providing the money, and money demand, you know, asking for the money, borrowing it. Now, corporations and businesses that are crashing and going out of business, they'll just grab whatever they can to stay in business a little bit longer. But I'm talking about, you know, the vast majority of companies out there that aren't going to go under. Are they going to expand? Well, first of all, there's no demand for the goods or services. That's going to undermine investment and expansion. But why should they borrow? You can lead a horse to water, but can't make him drink. If he's not thirsty, if he's bloated with cash, he's not thirsty. See, money supply solutions are not the answer. And that applies to left and right, too. You know, on the right, you know, QE, quantitative easing, you know, give the money for free to investors and bankers, and now to non-financial sources as well. That's what's going on, right? Well, what about this thing called modern money theory, MMT, which is really a monetary solution as well, with all the limitations of monetary solution, or it might be monetary a fiscal solution parading as a monetary solution. But I'm not big on monetary solutions, because in crises like this, you can make all the money available, but it doesn't mean it's going to be taken up and used to expand, or even consumption. Why do people want to borrow and buy a new car when they're not sure they're going to have a job 6 months from now? They're not going to do that. Well, those who are working and doing well at the top, yeah, they will. Same with houses, home loans, and so forth. So, you know, the COVID-19 has certainly whacked consumption and investment, but once it's got whacked, the fact of not enough wage income has kept, even when people come back part-time, some, is not enough to re-stimulate the economy. And therefore, you get overlaid on top of the negative consumption effects, a negative economic effect in general. And the same goes for business investment. At first impacted by the shutdowns and no demand, but now running its own dynamic, its own course. And the partial rehiring that's underway is only a tepid, small recovery. And it's not going to last. And then you got the negative impacts coming of state and local government layoffs. You got the continued deepening of the global recession, and therefore trade as a drag on recovery. You got the worsening consumption investment. All of that is keeping everything at a stagnation level. But the big shoe will drop when we start getting defaults and bankruptcies later in the second wave. We're already seeing some of that in some of retail and in the fracking oil patch. We're already seeing some of that. But the pressures are already building there. And of course, when you have defaults simply means they weren't able to make the interest and principal payments on their debt. But the next step after default, when they aren't able to do that, if the banks don't loosen up the terms of their loans to them, is for these companies to go bankrupt. You know, banks will try, investors will try to put off bankruptcy as much as they can, but sometimes these businesses are in such bad shape they have no choice. Well, if this low growth, you know, at 3/4 of normal GDP continues for 3-6 months, then you're going to see a big wave of defaults, bankruptcies and defaults. What are the vulnerable industries? Well, we know airlines are not going to fully come back. And all the supporting industries and airports and so forth for the airlines. A lot of hotels and hotel chains are in deep trouble. Movie chains already defaulting and bankrupting. AMC, for example, right? Theme parks, as I said, Disneyland, only 1 out of 5 normal returning. Local transport. Restaurants, of course, especially small independents everywhere, defaulting. Going out of business, personal services, education is not going to be the same. Education, increasing remote education, colleges, universities won't need as many staff on campus, and they're going to convert a lot of their instructors to adjuncts and part-time, even more. So less employment, less hours of work as it goes remote teaching, and that will eventually spread down to the high school level. Big box retails, Neiman Marcus, JCPenney, Lord & Taylor, soon Macy's and others, going out of business, shutting down hundreds of stores everywhere. When that happens, the malls collapse. They're already collapsing. The biggest malls in America, in Minnesota and in New Jersey, have already gone bankrupt. You know, what do we got? Thousands of malls. CoreSight Research predicts 35% of the malls are going to go belly up. 35%. Big problems with commercial property, not just malls, office buildings. People are going to work remote more. You don't need as much office buildings. Well, that construction is going to come to a halt, virtual halt. And a lot of those office building investors are going to go under as well, just like the mall people. Resorts, theme parks. And then we got the fracking sector, which is already defaulting across the board, you know, both in Texas and the Dakotas. Big defaults there. And when you have all these defaults and they multiply, they have a chilling effect on investment elsewhere. When banks have to deal with these defaults, all the bad loans that aren't being paid when they default go on the bank's balance sheets, and the more that that builds up, the less that banks lend to everybody. So you get a credit squeeze, a credit freeze. And that's the second wave in the economy. And that's the wave that can throw us into a true bona fide depression, even greater than 1930s, because we're starting at a much lower point, you see. Yeah, when the financial system freezes up, when banks don't lend, and then, you know, it's questionable whether they're lending their own money now. They're lending the government money, but are they really lending their own funds? And when you get financial failures, you know, it has a psychological effect, and it freezes up not only bank lending, but other companies start pulling in their horns, battening down their hatches, and laying off people except skeleton crews and so forth. There was an excellent article today in the Financial Times by this guy, Mohammed El Arian, who is a big global financial guy, ran big bond funds and so forth, well-respected and so forth. And he really pointed out the essence. I was amazed with this article because he indicated how we are so loaded up on debt, the private sector, and now the government sector, because of the way they handled the 2008-09 crash. Both the government, the Fed, just kept handling all this free money liquidity into the system, and the private sector began adding up, leveraging itself, more and more debt as well because the interest rates were so low. So over the last 10 years, we got this huge buildup in private corporate debt, household debt. Household debt, I think, up 16% according to the Fed, or maybe it's 12% just in the last few months. Corporate private debt, 16%, government debt, 14%, just in a matter of months. Well, all that has to be paid for, you see. All the principal and interest has to be paid for. And when your income collapses because of a deep recession, whether your households or businesses, revenues or whatever, or tax revenues, you can't pay the principal and interest on all this massive mountain of debt that's been built up. And when you can't pay, you default. And when you default, you go bankrupt. And that sends this chilling effect across the entire system. And now you're in a totally different phase when you have a financial crash on top of the real economy crash. In 2008-09, the financial crash came first, dragged down the rest of the economy. The Fed bailed out the financial immediately, but it took 6-7 years for the rest to recover, and then not really totally. And on top of that, now we have this bigger crash beginning now with the real side of the economy and running the threat of a financial crash to follow. Well, that's why the Fed is pre-bailing out the banks, you see, and all the other companies to prevent them from defaulting. It's trying to desperately prevent this second phase where you have the financial system crashes along with the real economy and each exacerbate each other. And that's where we are heading.